Now, I've not said much about the Earth Goddess, but you've probably been able to gather some idea of what she is like from what I have said. But I want to say just a little more about her before passing on to consider the golden light. Also a little more about the significance of her promise. On the whole, in the sutra, she is rather a shadowy figure. As we saw last week, the sutra contains a vivid description of the great goddess Saraswati in the form of a hymn of praise. But there's no corresponding hymn to Dridha. Similarly, the ritual worship of Saraswati was described. The ritual worship of the great goddess Shri is also described, as we shall see next week. But there's no description of the ritual worship of Dridha. She remains shadowy, amorphous, unrecognized. In modern Hindu India, there's much the same sort of situation. Saraswati is a highly popular goddess. She's worshipped all over India, especially by scholars, writers, students, as we saw last week. And Shri, or Lakshmi, is no less popular. If anything, she's even more popular than Saraswati, even more widely worshipped. She's worshipped, to begin with, by all householders, especially by shopkeepers, businessmen, financiers, and speculators in stocks and shares. They all worship Shri. They all worship Lakshmi. Other goddesses are also worshipped. There's Durga, the ten-armed slayer of the buffalo demon. Then there's Kali, the black one, who dances on the prostrate corpse of her husband, Shiva, who wears a garland of freshly severed heads, and whose red tongue hangs out, and whose mouth drips with blood. There's also Sitala, the dreaded goddess of smallpox. All these goddesses are worshipped by millions of people in India. They all have their shrines, they have their images, they have their priests. But Dridha is not worshipped. She has no shrine, no image, no priests. But the omission is more apparent than real. In a sense, all goddesses are earth goddesses, just as all gods are sky gods. Dridha is perhaps the original Indian earth goddess, not to say earth mother, before her various functions became differentiated. She is paralleled, to some extent at least, by similar figures in other lands, other cultures, by Rhea and Demeter in ancient Greece, by Isis and Hathor in Egypt, by Ishtar in Babylonia, by Diana of the Ephesians with her rows of breasts, and by Erda or Hertha in northern Europe, also by Malinzi among the Mexicans. She's more closely paralleled, perhaps, by the various anonymous Neolithic figures, the so-called Neolithic Venuses, figures with enormous breasts and buttocks, with enormous wombs, but with only rudimentary heads. Like them, perhaps, Dridha represents the primitive reality behind the more sophisticated appearance. That is to say, the more sophisticated appearance represented by some of the other goddesses. But be that as it may, Dridha is not only a more shadowy figure than Saraswati or Shri, she's also much less human. I've said that the three goddesses represent three different departments of human activity, that their promises to protect the sutra represent transformations of these departments, transformations achieved through placing them at the service of the golden light. But in the case of Dridha, this is only partly true. Her promise to protect the preacher of the sutra therefore has a somewhat different significance, a more complex significance. Those human energies which are part of nature can be placed at the service of the golden light. They can be transformed. But nature herself cannot be placed at the service of the golden light. Nature herself cannot be transformed. All that we can transform is our attitude to nature, and that is sufficient. Our attitude to nature can be considered under three headings. First of all, our use of nature, that is to say, of natural resources and the environment. Secondly, the appreciation of nature or enjoyment of nature. And thirdly, the understanding of nature. I'll say just a few words about each of these in turn, and then proceed to the golden light.